Chapter 8. Cody stirs at the shift of the mattress beneath him. For one half-asleep instant, he's entirely sure it's Waxer or Boyle trying to pull a prank, or that he's back in training on Kamino with Rex crawling into his bunk after a nightmare. The hum of a ship in hyperspace means relative safety, so he doesn't go for his blaster. Just makes a sound of indignation and opens one eye. "You'd have better luck under the covers," Mace tells him, quiet, amused. And Cody just stares at him for a moment, processing. Then, disgruntled, he sits up enough to shove the blankets down, wriggles under them, and tucks himself back against the wall with a grunt.
"A morning person, I see,"
Mace says. And Cody can't quite get his words together for a response, so he makes a rude sound instead. With a soft snort, Mace slides into bed beside him and says,
"Pons brought your kit with him. I assume you don't want dinner right now."
"No," Cody manages, displeased with everything. He buries his face in the pillow, but his spot isn't as warm now. With a sigh, he rolls over and Mace is warm. Mace is stretched out on his back on the mattress, eyes closed. And Cody knows he should give him space, but the temptation proves too much. Deliberately, Cody shifts enough that he can curl into Mace's side, leeching body heat, and sighs in relief. Space is cold in a bone-deep way that leaves him grouchy and sore. He's never minded the jungle planets or desert worlds the way some of his brothers do, but cold's terrible. Less so right now, at least. There's a pause, like surprise, and then a low, quiet hum of warm amusement. A hand touches his where it's pressed to Mace's shoulder, and Mace says,
"I see you stealing blankets isn't going to be a problem."
"Only if you piss me off," Cody mutters, and closes his eyes. Night. Another stretch of silence. Delicate. Contemplative.
"Good night," Mace returns,
and then says nothing more. Cody drifts back to sleep, pleased with the warmth and quiet. If he dreams at all, it's nothing he remembers afterwards. Strange shadows drive Mace from sleep well before the first shift, a lingering sense of dread heavy against his skin and thick on his tongue. It's strangling, malevolent. And Mace opens his eyes in the darkness and can hear his own heartbeat, loud and fast in his ears. There's no attack, not yet, at the very least. The ship is quiet, still far from the next shift change. And there are no minds in distress except for an engineer who just dropped a wrench on their foot. No one is lurking. And if there's another ship approaching, Mace can't find any hint of it. The arm draped over his side is warm, as is the body pressed up behind him. Mace closes his eyes, then opens them again deliberately, and slides out of bed. In his wake, Cody shifts, mutters something, and opens one eye, looking mildly more alert than he did last night.
"Problem?"
he asks, thick with sleep. Mace considers this for a moment.
"Not yet,"
he says. Cody huffs in annoyance and steals Mace's discarded portion of the covers, dragging them in and hunkering down.
"Ugh, Dekut la jeti,"
he mutters, and the title itself is a curse. Mace snorts before he can help it, finding his clothes as quietly as he can. By the time he's pulled them on, Cody is asleep again, and Mace leaves him be. The alarm will wake him up before shift, and Mace needs space,
needs to pry apart his dreams and understand them. Because the darkness there is unsettling. In the hush, his feet take him to the observation room, and Mace doesn't bother to be surprised. He is, however, startled to find another figure at the windows, staring out into the blurred stars of hyperspace, wrapped in his robes and looking tired. Mace pauses in the doorway, watching Obi-Wan for a long moment, and then steps inside, crossing the room with quiet steps to join him. The smile Obi-Wan casts him is wan, wry, and he shifts over to give Mace a little more room.
Mace, early mornings all around, I see.
Mace inclines his head, still able to feel the clutching shadows that followed him through his sleep.
You feel it too,
he says gravely. Obi-Wan pauses, then grimaces, running a hand through his hair. Judging by the state of it, it isn't the first time he's done it this morning.
It woke me from a sound sleep,
he confesses with a crooked smile.
Only I can't seem to tell what it is. The force is clouded,
Mace allows, keeping his eyes on the stars beyond the window.
Usually the shadows lighten away from the core, but...
But, Obi-Wan finishes for him,
given our destination, it's highly likely they'll simply get darker.
His eyes find Mace's in their vague reflections, and he says,
Nothing has emerged from the caldera in a lifetime. That we know of,
Mace says quietly. Obi-Wan sighs tiredly. He doesn't try to argue, though.
Whatever Grievous wants at the edge of the old empire, I doubt it's good for us. Though maybe he just wants to sightsee and capture a few of our bases.
Mace doesn't even bother acknowledging that. Because if Grievous wanted to make advances into the Outer Rim, he wouldn't have picked Ord Radama to start his attack. It's near several hyperlanes, but none of them are major trade routes, and there are few planets nearby to advance his campaign. The Republic needs to keep their bases there, but it's a target of little value otherwise.
The Empire fell 1,000 years ago,
he says,
but it hasn't eliminated the danger those planets possess. Grievous may not be a Force user, but he serves one.
Obi-Wan is silent for a long moment.
Any word on Dooku's plans?
He asks. Doesn't use Quinlan's name, even though all of the High Council know exactly what Quinlan is doing right now.
He's relatively new to being a Sith. If he's seeking more power or more information that his master won't provide him. It's possible,
Mace allows.
But given the disruption caused by the caldera, one ship would be able to get into the old empire easily. But there's hardly any need to stage an attack if that's all Dooku wants. He could have entered without drawing attention to it, and we never would have known.
From the face Obi-Wan pulls, he doesn't find this argument overly convincing.
Yes, well, I'd hate to disagree with you, Mace. However, knowing my own master and his penchant for dramatics, likely inherited, I would believe that Dooku could stage an attack just to draw attention to something.
For a moment, Mace can't even begin to form a response to the sheer irony of Obi-Wan saying that. He raises an incredulous eyebrow at him, heavily judgmental, and says,
Yes, well, it's a dramatic lineage you come from.
So terribly dramatic, yes, Obi-Wan says, without a shred of self-awareness.
I spent my whole apprenticeship absolutely sure I was going to strangle Qui-Gon for his ridiculousness at some point. It was terrible.
Mace closes his eyes and reminds himself, very deliberately, that it's a bad idea to whack fellow council members over the head. It's rude. It's undignified.
even if it would feel good.
How awful for you,
he manages after a moment. The way Obi-Wan eyes him says his tone wasn't quite as even there as he meant it to be. But beyond a faint narrowing of his eyes, Obi-Wan doesn't comment. Instead, he folds his hands into his sleeves and asks,
Could this all be a front? I know we expected Grievous to go after the cloning facilities, but if Ventress takes up the task while we're out here, it could go badly for Kamino.
Mace frowns, considering for a long moment.
Shock is aware of a threat,
he says at length.
And Aegon Kolar should be joining her on Kamino today. If I were to bet anyone's skill with a lightsaber against Ventress's, it would be Aegon's.
Obi-Wan chuckles.
Just as well you didn't send him for his ability to charm the natives, he says dryly. Master T will hopefully be able to smooth over his rough edges with La Masu.
A pause, and then, more quietly, he says,
I dislike the fact that they would target Kamino to begin with. There are enough fully trained clones there to make it difficult, and the planet's defenses are strong. The Kaminoans are not careless.
No, Mace agrees, but Ventress is not a general. She's an assassin. I would assume that if she's involved, they're looking to kill someone or steal something that will cripple the production of more clones.
Jango Fett's DNA,
Obi-Wan murmurs. Or they're targeting the trainers. Master T, perhaps.
Shock will have Commander Colt of the Rancor Battalion with her at all times,
Mace says evenly.
Between him, Shock's awareness, and Aegon's swordsmanship, Ventress will have a very bad day if she tries to go after Shock or the other trainers.
Obi-Wan's relief is a quiet thing, but clearly visible.
I'm glad she has a guard, he says. I wouldn't have thought she would accept one, but I'm glad.
Mace closes his eyes again.
Shock has been a Jedi longer than you've been alive,
he reminds Obi-Wan, with a touch of amusement.
She knows to accept her own vulnerabilities when lives are on the line. It does not make her any less strong. Just wise.
Obi-Wan, who has never in his life met a limit he didn't test at least twice, makes a face he should be too old for.
Yes, well, sometimes having a guard is more of a hindrance than a help.
Very deliberately, Mace says nothing, and allows the silence to speak volumes.
I'm not saying always, Mace protests. In certain situations, the addition of another person can make things far more complicated than they otherwise need to be.
The hiss of the door sliding open saves Mace from a barrage of eloquently worded excuses, and he's relieved enough that even the sight of Anakin dragging himself in with a yawn is a boon. Eyes still bleary, Anakin stumbles over to them, collapsing into one of the chairs with a groan.
Anyone else feel like they got run over by a bantha?
He asks, rubbing his face, then glances up, locks eyes with Mace, and freezes like a Dugar Dugar in the lights of a speeder.
We were just discussing that, Obi-Wan says,
apparently all too ready to drop the previous topic and unaware of the sudden tension.
Though given the direction we're headed, it should be unsurprising that the dark side of the Force is so aggressive here.
Anakin blinks, gaze darting away from Mace with something like relief.
Ord Radama?
He asks, brow furrowing. Mace raises a brow at Obi-Wan, who rolls his eyes but keeps his mouth shut, and then says,
Ord Radama and the Radama Void border the Stygian Caldera.
A nebula, right?
Anakin says, slightly wary.
Yes,
Obi-Wan says, all dry patience.
A very important nebula in galactic history, O Padawan of mine. The caldera is what separates Republic space from the ruins of the Sith Empire. Behind that nebula are several dozen Sith-aligned planets. Most of them are deserted, but I do not like the odds that they are entirely deserted, given what's happening to the galaxy.
Sith worlds? Anakin echoes, and his jaw clenches. Grievous isn't even a Force user. What the hell does he want with the old Empire?
He may not be a Force user, but he works with many. Mace points out. Our best bet is to keep him as far away from the Caldera as possible, and chase him back to Republic space before he can slip through our lines.
That's why you had Aayla draw back to that point instead of staying near the planet, Anakin realizes. She's a blockade for Grievous.
Mace inclines his head. Aayla understands the importance of her position. She and her men will fight until we arrive, but the fact that Grievous hasn't advanced is troubling. We don't know his goals, and I would rather not guess at them and be wrong.
Anakin's expression twists, and he rubs his hands over his face. I dreamed that something was hunting me, he said. Somewhere dark, and I knew I had to keep running no matter what, but it kept getting closer. A chill slides down Mace's spine, and he exchanges looks with Obi-Wan, trying not to let his concern show. Mace isn't usually one to look to the future, tries to put more stock in the living force than the unifying force, but Anakin is one of the strongest Jedi Mace has ever encountered, and Mace is willing to trust that the Force speaks through him in ways it doesn't with other Jedi. Deliberately, when Obi-Wan doesn't move, Mace steps forward to take the seat next to Anakin. The flicker of Anakin's eyes towards him is deeply wary, but Mace doesn't let his expression change, doesn't let his presence waver.
Was there anything else?
He asks, and Anakin's eyes narrow faintly.
Around you, in the darkness, could you see anything?
Surprise crosses Anakin's face, and he sits up, wariness still present but pushed back. Maybe? He says with a frown and closes his eyes. There were flashes above me, like flares going off, and I kept tripping over things. Maybe just a manifestation of the dark dreams they all had, but stronger because of Anakin's connection to the Force. Mace considers that for a long moment, then asks,
Where were you going? You were running away, but did you have a destination? Was it chasing you towards something?
Anakin opens his eyes, swallows, meets Mace's gaze, and says, Yeah, there was a path. Kind of, and I didn't want to see what was at the end of it, but it was something big and dark. Ord Radama is a swampy planet, every inch of ground desperately reclaimed from the bogs. If one tried to run through the swamps, they might have a similar experience, and starfighters overhead would give the impression of flares. Mace weighs the images against what he knows of the planet, and then says,
A thing or a person?
Anakin stills for a long, long moment. A person, he says finally. I think it was a person. Mace inclines his head and rises to his feet.
Ord Radama, possibly, he says. If the Force is trying to warn us that our invasion will fail, perhaps we should make a different plan to capture Grievous.
Anakin is staring at him, and his expression is caught between caution and confusion. It was just a dream, he says finally. Obi-Wan winces. Brows rising, Mace looks between the two of them.
Jedi, he says, do not make plans. We do not calculate. We do not overthink. The Force moves through us as instinct and action. We follow. If your instincts say this dream is important, I'm inclined to listen to them.
Anakin opens his mouth, hesitates, closes it. "Oh," he says, and Mace studies him closely, wonders why he's gone pale so suddenly. Master Windu, do you get visions?
Sometimes, Mace says, if rarely. My gifts lie in other areas.
Vapod, Anakin ventures. Mace nods.
That is one of them. Have you ever looked closely enough at how objects exist in the Force? Enough at how an object exists in the Force to see how to break it?
No. It's Obi-Wan who answers. Quiet.
I'm afraid I never had a talent for such things myself, so teaching them is almost impossible for me. And Anakin is not fond of bookwork.
Anakin gives him a mulish look. If I recall, Master, you weren't fond of making me do bookwork, either.
Indeed, Obi-Wan agrees, droll. Even I managed to learn my lesson after enough catastrophic failures. It might be a valuable skill for you to learn, Mace says, unimpressed. You're strong enough in the Force that there's a chance it could come easily to you.
Did you learn it easily? Anakin asks. And it's not quite a challenge, but the edge of one, maybe.
I was born with the skill, Mace says, unmoving. It's how I was able to kill Jango Fett so easily on Geonosis. I saw where he would break.
Anakin doesn't quite blanch, but the thought is there in the tension that snaps through him. Objects, he echoes uneasily.
And people, Mace confirms, quiet.
He curls his hands together at the small of his back, looks up to Obi-Wan, and then says,
if you want to learn, I can teach you. For now, we should have a backup plan for taking Grievous, if he tries to slip past us during the fight.
Something to bring Aayla into, certainly, Obi-Wan says, determinedly light. Quinlan taught her how to plan a sneak attack very well. I can sneak, Anakin says, offended. Even if you're always getting caught, Master. Thankfully, the sweep of the door cuts Obi-Wan off before he can take offense. A moment later, Ahsoka slips in, pauses like she's startled to see the three of them awake, and then smiles, something like relief. Early morning meeting, Masters? She asks, approaching, and then folds herself down to sit at Anakin's feet. And you didn't invite me? I thought you were sleeping, Anakin defends, and nudges her with the toe of his boot. Nightmares, Snips? Just darkness, Ahsoka says, and curls her arms around herself, shivering. It was too hot and too dark, and I hated it. Too hot, Mace thinks, and tilts his head. His own dream was stifling, too, but he'd thought that was a reaction to the unfamiliar heat of Cody's body. Casting a glance at Anakin, he finds a startled expression on his face and asks,
Anakin?
My dream was hot, too, he says, frowning. Not like a desert, though. Everything was sweaty and damp and strangling.
Now that you mention it, it was rather muggy.
Obi-Wan agrees thoughtfully and glances at Mace.
Ord Radama is a relatively cold planet, at least near the capital.
Not Ord Radama, the Force is warning them about, then. Somehow Mace likes that even less. He inclines his head in agreement, then straightens and says,
I could use a spar to clear my head. Obi-Wan?
Obi-Wan rolls his eyes in a way he probably thinks Mace can't see.
With all due respect, Mace, I refuse to spar anywhere near you ever again, and you are fully aware of it.
Really? Anakin asks, amused, and looks between them. Why? Did something happen? Mace snorts.
It got out of hand,
he allows. That training cell hasn't been the same since, Obi-Wan agrees ruefully. Unless we have a place where we can get safely carried away, given our styles. Anakin grins, the look of a Padawan knowing his master more than well enough to pick out his tells. You slammed into the ceiling, didn't you? And then someone yelled at you for denting it.
I? Obi-Wan says with dignity. I'm sure I did no such thing.
He did. Mace confirms without hesitation, and Anakin laughs. Well, he says, grinning, I'd like to spar Master Windu, if you don't mind.
Of course not.
Mace eyes him, then Ahsoka, and says,
I would like to see your teamwork, if you're willing.
Ahsoka blinks in surprise, but Anakin raises a challenging brow. You think you can take us? He asks, cocky. His attitude is the sort of thing time usually wears away, and Mace reminds himself yet again that Anakin is still very, very young, even if he's been given a Padawan of his own.
Either way, it will be interesting,
he says mildly, and Anakin rolls his eyes a little. Well, Snips? He asks, and Ahsoka huffs but rises to her feet, stretching. Sure, she says. Thanks, Master Windu.
Of course, Mace breathes out.
Anakin is a very good swordsman himself, from what Mace knows, and he hasn't seen him fight from up close in a few months. The war has likely honed his skill further, and Mace is interested, deeply, in finding out just how skilled he is. Jedi don't look forward to fights, but this is sparring. Mace can want to do this and not have to hold himself back. Rex is all but alone at a table in the mess when Cody gets his tray, sitting at one end with the 212th's medic at the far end near the doors. It's not unusual. Rex likes quiet in the mornings, and most of the 501st is aboard the Resolute. Practically everyone else in the mess is 91st, and while Cody likes Pond's men well enough, they're not familiar in anything but their faces. When he settles across from Rex, though, Rex doesn't hesitate to give him a nod, Gaze doing a quick sweep before he says,
I was expecting you to miss your shift, Vod.
Cody snorts. You expect me and Mace to miss our shifts? He asks pointedly. Rex pauses, then grimaces.
Never mind,
he says, exasperated, and Cody smirks at him.
It's not like much of anything's changed,
he says, and it's probably the biggest lie he's ever told Rex.
I'm a free man, he wants to say.
Just where I'm sleeping.
Rex huffs, and the roll of his eyes is unappreciated.
Not even that, he says. Got caught up talking, huh?
Remembering his words about being out so late the other night, Cody pauses. He hadn't thought about that, but, well, the implication's pretty clear. Determinedly nonchalant, Cody focuses on his food.
Well, would you have believed me if I told you the truth?
We are plotting to free several million men from enforced service to the Republic.
Would probably not have gone over all that much better than, I'm sleeping with Mace Windu, after all.
No,
Rex says without so much as a moment's hesitation.
Not in the least.
Cody shrugs like Rex made his point for him. And we did. Talk, I mean. Rex grimaces.
No details, Vod. I have to be able to look him in the eye sometimes.
He pauses and then says, You didn't come in together. Shine wearing off already?
I thought you just said you didn't want details,
Cody mutters, rolling his eyes. But at Rex's look, he says,
He got up early. I think something disturbed him.
You and how you turn into some sort of strangling cephalopod in your sleep? Rex says dryly, then frowns. Wait, General Windu was disturbed? How could you tell?
There are only vague memories to go along with Cody's second brief moment of alertness. He hesitates, considering, and waves a hand at his face. It's there, just around the eyes, kind of. As he racks his memory, something else surfaces, and he winces at the recollection of calling a high general and the master of the order an idiotic Jedi. That was probably uncalled for.
What's that face for? You have a bout of early morning Cody syndrome?
Rex asks, and he sounds far too amused. Cody scowls at him, debating whether to kick him under the table again. But he tried that yesterday. It's too late, though, because Rex laughs. That's a yes, then. Has he seen you like that before, or did he get a big shock when you called him a pedunk rankweed sucker?
I did not, Cody mutters, but the tips of his ears are hot. He focuses on his calf instead of Rex, because it's much more agreeable, and says to the cup,
any chance you've seen him this morning?
Rex shakes his head, still looking unbecomingly amused. If his face gets stuck like that, he's going to give all the brothers a bad name, Cody thinks uncharitably.
Not yet. He turns in his seat, looking around, and smirks when he spots Pons halfway down the next table.
Pons, where's your general?
Pons glances up from his pad, raising a brow, looks between Rex and Cody, then very obviously shakes his head and says,
last I saw, he, General Skywalker, and Commander Tano were dueling in the training room on C deck.
Dueling. Going by Pon's relaxed tone, probably a practice duel, rather than a duel to the death.
Cody checks the time, considers how long it will take him to walk down and see for himself, and then regretfully sets the idea aside. It's always fun to watch Jedi spar. They move faster than any clone, and it's like the laws of gravity stop applying as soon as the Force comes into play. Between Anakin, Ahsoka, and Mace, that's got to be one hell of an interesting match, too.
Abuse your authority and pull up the security footage later, Rex tells him, waving his thanks to Pons.
It's clear he knows exactly where Cody's thoughts are, and he's smirking about it.
Maybe if you ask nicely, security will even give you a copy for when you're stationed apart.
This time, Cody really does kick him, and he doesn't regret it at all.